Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello, and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
John!
And welcome to the show. This week, we will review Smile. As always, John will give us...
Smile!
John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we go to deep spoiler analysis. But first, we do go back to TV Corner and continue watching Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities. Episode six, titled Dreams in the Witch House.
Dreams in the Witch House of DJ Quills.
I thought it was Quills. Is that the wrong DJ?
Quills.
Starring the amazing Rupert Grint. Yeah. What'd you think of this?
I liked it.
No, I liked it. No, you didn't. Really?
I had some questions about it.
Okay.
I thought it was fun. I like the whole dreamscape sort of supernatural stuff is up my alley. I thought Rupert Grint did a great job. I thought DJ Quails did a fantastic job too as a rat that I was having a little trouble because this is where things get confusing. I have no idea. Unless I just wasn't paying attention. I have no idea where some of these characters came from. I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I missed something I had to have because I was like, where did this human rat guy come from? Who is he?
Yeah.
Do you have any answers? I was asking you.
No, I absolutely hated this. This was a terrible episode. I don't. No, this is god awful. I guess they all can't be winners. This was like actively bad and boring and poorly directed. So, sorry, Catherine Hardwick. it's terrible.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I didn't hate it, but I was just confused. Like, most of the ending, I was like, okay, so I get it. The witch, yeah. So, why is she a part of this forest? Why is she a Groot?
She
is Groot.
Well, I chalk up a lot of your questions to the poor storytelling and poor script writing.
Also, Catherine Hardwick, stop trying to put your little twist on things. I mean, also represent McAllen, whatever.
Yeah.
Where we're kind of from. But having the nun at the end say, get the fuck out of my house in the church was like, one of the most off-putting things. Like, it just didn't make any sense for any sort of character or period or like.
I am a huge fan of Rupert Grint. A lot of the stuff he does has been really interesting after, you know, Harry Potter and stuff like that. He's on the Apple show, Servant. Is it Servant? It's good.
Yeah, which is directed or created by somebody big, right?
M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong. Yeah. He is like oversees the series or whatever, and helps with a lot of the stories. Actually hires really interesting directors. Rupert Grint is excellent on the show, and I've liked a lot of his choices also. They're not always obvious. And I thought he did actually a really good job on what I thought was a pretty boring story. And I hate to, nitpick and just pick apart stuff, but I thought some of the just shots and direction of this was weird. Like, for one, and maybe you noticed this, maybe you didn't, but I could have sworn when those two guys are talking in the bar, the bar looked too contemporary for the time period. So I was lost on what year it was for a sec until I kind of put together they were all in you know, whatever period clothing, whatever this takes place, 1800s or whatever.
Yeah, I would say
maybe that was.
I don't think the bar was too off. Actually, I think it was period appropriate because this is 1920 something, right?
Yeah, I think what the problem I had was like the angles were poorly chosen.
And they very much were. They were almost like upshots the entire time, which was
yeah.
Like,
they were
unless we're being offensive to like a very short DP or something.
I thought some of the shot selection in this movie was really poor, and I thought some of and that actually is you have and that goes to my other thing when he decides to go to back to that I'm assuming witch house, right?
Yeah,
it's. Incredibly nice, the production design. I even really one positive I will say I did like the witch, the design of the witch. That was interesting, at least. Though I didn't like the way she
it looked pretty cool.
But I didn't like the way she like ran after him. She ran with her arms out and ran didn't move her arms when she ran. It was kind of awkward. And the house is like I guess again like the house the witch actual witch house is really nicely designed. A lot of production into it, but I thought that like. The shot selection is really poor too in there. It looked like a set. Does that make sense? I never thought for a second that it was a real location. Never grabbed me in that way. And
I will point out though, they use the wrong glassware. I mean, I know it looks very similar to what it's supposed to be, and they were probably like, fuck it, nobody's gonna notice.
In the bar?
So sorry, guys. Your lowball glasses, even though they do look very similar, nobody was able to blow glass that thin. I don't think.
You're right.
Too targety property. Just kidding. Sorry, props.
Yeah, I had a hard time with that. I think it's because I think I noticed a lot of these things because I was kind of actively bored with the story. I did not care for what was happening.
And you were so excited because of Catherine Hardwicke.
I don't mean to. I don't want to be. Where is she from is irrelevant to me, like in terms of like her direction, but like all of her choices as when she kind of started making mainstream movies, I think have been really poor. Like directing. Like I never even liked anything she's directed at
well,
on the mainstream.
To be fair, because Rolando sets. The movie Twilight on such a high pedestal that nothing's ever going to be that good.
Yeah. I mean,
like I've never seen Rolando weep until he saw that Edward Cullen started to glitter in the sun. And he was like, she fucking nailed it.
I've never seen any of those movies just to be on record about it. And I actively didn't watch them.
The first one's really funny. Yeah, the first one's really funny.
I've heard that. I've seen clips. I've seen the hilarity. I've seen the whatever.
I watched most of that movie because it was like on TV and I didn't know what it was. And I was like, this is fucking hilarious. What is this? Like, oh, this is the Twilight movie. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
It's good shit. Thanks, Catherine Hardwicke. Famed production designer of the movie Freaked.
So not that I hate comparing, you shouldn't compare work, right? But some of the other pieces we saw previously, I thought had a good, they had created a good atmosphere and tension to them. So I was always pushed and compelled that. On to where the story was going. They were trying to tell too complicated and too big of a story for the hour show that this is, that I didn't really much follow or care for the characters enough to be invested in whatever was going on with them. So I thought it was a pretty poor job around, not specifically only Catherine Hardwicke, just the adaptation of the H.P. Lovecraft and the direction. Like I said, I think a lot of the production design was nice and like the witch design was interesting, but overall I thought it was kind of all over the place and clumsy and just average.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like there was no atmosphere to this short at all. And then I agree, too big of a story. They didn't need to add this, like, which I'm sure is a part of the H.P. Lovecraft story, but, like, they didn't need to add the society of paranormal, whatever the fuck, that he was a part of yeah. to justify him doing this for his entire life.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he was that guy. I forgot that he was doing that. Yeah.
Because he saw his sister get sucked into a forest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the story was all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah, but DJ Quails.
Quails.
Who is a rat with a human head, because I'm not sure, actually. It's like when I saw him for the first time and it's like this rat is behind a wall, right? Staring at him. I guess when they go to the house for the first time, right? The witch's house. And he's like, hey, I'm DJ Quails. And he like starts crawling around. That's when I was like, what is this character again? And then I don't think it got explained to me, so I don't know.
Yeah.
No. I just know the witch had a rat,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The witch made a rat, but then I'm like, okay, so it's like a quote-unquote slave to the witch, right? Like, stuck to the witch. Yeah. But then this rat's like, come on, you got to do this thing so we can both be saved. Come on, I'm DJ Quails.
That's funny. It's funny he just kept saying his name. It's a little off.
Even though we had like a 15-minute conversation about what character DJ Quails played.
Who played the rat? Which is kind of funny
because...
It's kind of how that went.
And then you were like, what rat? And I was like, the rat, the one that kept running around going like, hey, I'm DJ Quails. I'm here to eat your stomach and take over your body.
Yeah. It was... So was the witch also Nia Vardalos, or was she just had that one cameo in the beginning?
I don't know. Well, no, she did come out again later. But I don't know. I had that same question. I wasn't sure. I like to say yes. And also, no, I don't want to point out anybody's weight. I'm just saying she got incredibly thin. So it took me a second to recognize her.
Yes. Yeah. I'm assuming?
No, it was somebody named Liz Johnson.
Oh, I see. I'm looking at the IMDb. Okay.
Okay.
I mean, I'm all for, starring roles for Rupert Grant, because the guy's fucking good actor. He's an interesting actor and lead, the choices he's made so far after his
yep.
big, fame break in Harry Potter. But yeah, unfortunately, I don't think his material was good enough.
Yeah, but what do you think about Avatar 2 coming out possibly this week, possibly in the past, whenever you listen to this?
I know that. So
I'm changing the subject, guys, because clearly we didn't love this story too much. But
I think Candy is a big fan of Avatar. She loves the first one. I watched it and enjoyed it, and maybe I saw it twice. I don't remember. This was a long time ago.
Yeah, I think I saw it twice and I was like, yeah, that was pretty good. But then I immediately forgot about it because I was like, it's not like the best thing on earth.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people that have already seen pre-screenings of it
mm-hmm.
that are kind of working like the studios said the same thing I'm thinking, where like I'm kind of like not into it. They said like I was 100% not into it going into it, but then I was 100% all about it when I came out of it. And I was like, that's cool. That's a pretty good way to approach it, I guess.
I just don't think the story and the sci-fi elements in it interest me. So, like, the type of story they're trying to tell, I don't care.
Because you're racist against blue people.
No, I like dystopian futures more. I like Blade Runner. But, fucking James Cameron's Terminator 2's futures more than... I don't know, Navi fucking blue creature guys futures. That I don't know. It doesn't interest me. Nature versus machine. Yeah. I mean, I probably will watch it. Take. Yeah. Yeah. Probably watch it twice. Like I did.
Is Sam Worthington in it?
Yeah. He's still in it. He's a blue dude.
Oh, shit. I wonder. Oh, yeah. That makes sense. That happened at the end of the movie.
So is Sigourney Weaver. I think she's in it, too. I think she's back. Spoiler. I don't know if that's.
I hope this revamps his career. Even though it became very clear that, sorry, Sam Worthington, but like he plays the same exact fucking character with no any other nuance. Interesting aspects about himself. Yeah. Yeah. He just plays the same guy. So we'll see what happens. Which brings us to our feature.
Okay, let's move on. The next one is, the next Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities is directed by what's his name? What's his name?
Manos.
Cosmosos.
What is it? Panos Cosmos.
Something like that. Yeah.
Manos y Manos.
We directed
Cosmetics.
He directed what was that?
Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Beyond the Black Rainbow, which we reviewed.
And Mandy, right?
Mandy, which I haven't seen. Yeah. So I'm assuming just on a visual level, I'm going to be stimulated. It's because it's going to be interesting to look at. Just knowing the type of director he is.
Panos Cosmatos.
There we go.
But he's like the son of somebody, right? The guy that shot Tombstone?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right.
Which, there's Panos Cosmatos, and then there's Dishes Cosmatos, which is his dad. You're welcome for that joke, everyone.
A+.
You can go ahead and write it down and tell all your friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Edgy Cosmatos jokes. Here on the Skeleton Boys.
his great uncle, Utensils Universos. Utensils Universalos instead of the Cosmatos. Yeah. You can write that one down too. I don't mind. You can steal all my stuff. It's fine.
Okay. With that said, let's move on to our main review of Smile. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For 2022's Smile.
What year is it?
I have coming in at number 3. People dying for great teeth. Coming in at number 2, I have a great smile makes a killing.
Yeah.
And coming in at number 1, Invisalign ads try goth approach.
This is, you got teeth on the brain still? How are your teeth? Are they better? They hurt? Or
no, they don't hurt anymore. Okay. I mean, once in a while, like if I'm not careful with. So sometimes if I'm tired, I tend to drink like a bunch of Red Bulls, which I completely fucks up like my entire physiology for some reason.
Yeah.
Like it irritates the shit out of like the inside of my gum lining and like my cheeks and my lips get instantly dry, which I'm sure is like I'm just dehydrated.
It's a feature of the Red Bull.
So, I mean, if I'm not careful with that stuff, I can definitely feel it. But for the most part, I keep forgetting they're there.
Okay. Cool. Well, you can always keep us up to date on your teeth, please.
Which this movie was triggering me because I'm like, I get it. I'm not there yet.
Many women have bad teeth.
I won't even die by this thing because they're like, no, the teeth just ain't it on this guy. And I'm like, what? No, I'm working on it. So hopefully I'll be allowed to be killed.
So Smile was a big surprise summer hit for Paramount, just now making it to streaming and Kurt, when we both originally saw, well, I did for sure saw this trailer during Black Phone. Didn't really think.
Yeah, I also saw it.
Didn't think much of it. I was like, it looks kind of like a mainstream-ish.
It slasher kind of reminded me of that movie Truth or Dare, which was, is Smile a Blumhouse movie? No, it's not.
Smile is not.
That's what confused me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it reminded me of that Blumhouse movie Truth or Dare, which I hate to say it was complete garbage.
Right. Yeah. I think you had mentioned that.
I don't hate to say it. I just like it's garbage.
I think you had mentioned that while we were talking about it, because it was like kind of like a big hit this summer and throughout the year. So we were kind of debating whether
I was like
to watch it
actively against it. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, so was I. Mean, and I wasn't interested either. Yeah. To be fair. Yeah.
But you would suggest it once in a while, like, should we watch it? Because you were like, maybe we should. Like, you were the one that was pushing it because you knew enough people liked it.
Right.
Why wouldn't we do it? And I was being a little too anti, like, no, I don't want to watch it. I don't want to watch it.
So
then my younger brother was like, hey, have you seen this movie yet? It's badass. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to fucking watch that. I follow a bunch of makeup effects, special effects, creature effects people on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And they started sharing what they did for the movie. And I was like, what the fuck? This is what this movie is? So then that's what changed my mind.
What I had, the story that caught my attention, which made me interested in this movie, was that this is Parker Finn's first writing directing project. And before the pandemic, he fought really hard to get it through the studio system. And so he can write and direct it, and he refused to change a lot of things so he can make the film he wanted. And he's one of the quote unquote successes in that he was able to get it through the system, got it right and directed, and it became a big success. So that's always welcoming to the horror community, right? To this, the horror fans, especially this year. This year, horror really was a lot of successes have come this year. So I was intrigued by that story. To see, okay, well, this movie there might be more to this movie than I assumed. So, which is how it got on my radar.
And I gotta say, as far as story is concerned, is there more to this movie? Yes and no. And I think that's actually in its favor, which I kind of really enjoyed.
Cool. So give me some of your first thoughts then.
Kind of right away, I was like, this is really fun. This is kind of badass. I think because I was already trying to compare it to Truth or Dare. But the acting is beyond superior. Sorry, actors in Truth or Dare, but like, you're not it.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, that really caught my attention. I was also kind of getting like a... characters feeling a little disconnected vibe, a la what was the Rebecca Hall movie we just saw? Resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was something a little off-putting about that too, and I was like, okay, I'm into this too now because I really like the movie Resurrection. And as the story started to unfold, I really enjoyed everything about it. I think I just liked the movie. I ended up really enjoying it.
I think this same. I think this movie was a complete success in that. It is a great meditation on trauma and well directed in explicitly showing like the psychology. There was always tension building in every scene, and he did a wonderful job, Parker Finn, of every scene feeling like moody and tension. And there was always, they put you in the character, Rose Cotter, and why she was going through these experiences. And I think Sosie Bacon, who I'm not familiar with, was excellent in this as kind of like her first big movie. And I thought she was excellent. And also Jesse T. Usher, A-Train, I think, right?
Yeah, A-Train. So,
and I'm a huge fan of Kyle Gallagher too. He has popped up a lot recently. It's almost explicitly in horror movies, I see him a lot. And he played the cop. He was also really good. So I really liked this movie, and I love that it's predicated on a big traumatic event of a patient committing suicide, and then it sort of unravels after that. And they do a great job of showing the mental trauma break of the character Rose. So I was completely in this movie. The only thing was that, like, I was a little, like, not 100% satisfied with the final images of this movie. Maybe something we could talk about in spoilers, right? But everything leading up to it, I thought was great.
Wonderfully made. You know what? I actually truly enjoyed that, but because I'm a fan of a certain genre of horror movies that I think you have actively said you don't like. So this is interesting.
Cool. And as just a comparison, as maybe you agree or disagree, but I thought it had like the same sort of mood intention of like It Follows as this cursed thing or whatever. And it's following you through the whole movie and it's kind of undefeatable. And I thought that this movie was similar setup. So.
And shout out to Cal Penn. Thanks for leaving the politics to do this.
I love that this movie had so much tension that he did a really good job, Parker Finn, of relieving it with comedy moments throughout the picture, which was always the best. Like, you just so many different moments where it just had this release of just big. There's comedy elements to it in character, like behavior and stuff like that. That the husband boyfriend of the sister was super funny, very subtly. Yeah. kind of just throughout, or even Cal Penn has like he's a great guy because like you see him and he suddenly he's of course wildly, you know, known for the Harold and Kumar movies, and just his presence alone in it makes you think like, okay, well, he's going to do something funny. And he doesn't to any large extent, but in the context of the certain scenes in this movie, there are like things that he delivers kind of almost comedically, but that are tension relieving also.
Yeah. I was going to say, I didn't catch anything. When he came out, I wasn't expecting him to be funny.
Right.
And, or anything to that degree, but there was something about his character was almost a sense of relief every time he popped out, because he knew it was going to be some sort of like positive reinforcement. Like, he's always like the, what can we do to like remedy the situation or help?
Right.
Which is why even though I should have seen it coming, I got caught off guard when he wasn't actually talking to her at one point.
Oh yeah.
It was like a dream sequence or something. And yes. I was like, oh fuck.
yeah. That was fucked up. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. I'm also talking about the same scene. The moments after. You. Yeah. The moment after that sequence was kind of like almost comedic, like comedy relieving.
So what would you say was your favorite without spoiling anything? Maybe we should give a quick little synopsis. So this lady who has a tragic history with her mother committing suicide, and you find out that it's because she didn't try to help her because she was afraid of her, is now trying to basically spend her entire life trying to help other people. And she's obsessed with the idea because she feels guilty.
Right. Yeah. Essentially.
And then this lady, this other lady who's trying to convince her she's not insane clinically, that she's seeing this thing, and that just smiles at her, which is great, because you know, when you hear her say these things out loud, when you hear people describe what this thing is out loud, it's like, what are you fucking talking about? So you see somebody smiling at you, I'm confused. But yeah, she sees this thing, this person kills himself in front of her, which is kind of the triggering moment for this thing to latch onto the person that saw or witnessed what was going on.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so
with that said, what was your favorite scare moment?
Let me quickly think. I first liked the one that caught me off guard was the one with the phone call. And it happened early on where her house alarm goes off. And of course, like, she has a security alarm and her phone rings and it's, you know, the cops or the security center. Oh my God. And
her mental state. Yeah. I felt so bad for her.
And this Well, that one was good, but I'll quickly explain that. There's a second one, but now that I think about it, but
no, you only get the one. So you're going to say that one because the second one's probably my favorite one.
The birthday party? Is that the one you like? I like the birthday party.
Oh, no, that was great.
That
though.
Was really good.
I was like, holy shit.
Her acting in it is fucking phenomenal, dude. Like, just her.
Oh my God, yes. Because you know, it wasn't intentional. And it's just like, oh, I mean, what would you think? I would be like, what the fuck is this lady's problem? Yeah.
But yeah. And then, well, I'll mention the first one. I'll finish mentioning the first one where, like, they call and then it ends up being the whatever, the creature haunting her.
Smile creature.
Yeah, the smile creature is talking to her over the phone.
Also, fully appreciate that this is never explained, which is why I think it relates to a certain genre of movies I like.
Yeah, and that little trick of her being fooled by it is cleverly used throughout this movie as sort of a basis, right? Like, it's done several times. I think one too many times it's done, in my opinion, for story's sakes. Okay. But overall, it was done really well, and it always caught me off guard, even when you should be expecting it at certain points, you know? But it happened pretty brilliantly throughout the movie. What was yours? What was your favorite?
My favorite moment, which, I mean, I was expecting it, but it was just, I thought it was so cleverly done, even though it is another phone call moment. Her ex-therapist is coming in to check in on her and keeps trying to get a hold of her and just shows up to her house when she's trying to be alone. And you can tell that she's about to contemplate suicide.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
She pulls a knife and then she sees like her therapist. She's like, shit. She like puts the knife back in and the therapist turns, looks at her, like waves, smiles and waves. And she's like, fine. So she lets the woman in. She's like, why the fuck are you? You're not allowed to be here. Blah, blah, blah. I didn't tell you to come here. Blah, blah, blah. She's like, I'm just worried about you. We're all worried about you.
Mm.
You know, you had a traumatic experience when you were a kid and I feel like it's resurfacing and blah, blah, blah. And they're having this like pretty legitimate conversation about her mental health.
It seems plausible.
And then the phone. Yeah. The phone starts to ring and it keeps ringing. And the therapist is just kind of like confused as to why, what is her main character's name?
Rose.
Rose is not even acknowledging the phone. She's like, are you going to get that? You know, like the phone's ringing basically, like, are you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which was also clever because it was like a landline. So it wasn't like a cell phone, right? I think it was like a cordless
home phone, actual landline telephone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's no way unless you look at the call ID, which most of the time were like blocked. So she's like, okay, I'm sorry, I'll be quick or whatever. So she answers the phone and it is that same therapist trying to get a hold of her, like, Rose, I've been trying to get a hold of you. Like, I really think we should meet and talk. And she's like, you know, she looks up and turns around and sees who she thought was her therapist just with that big smile. Mm-hmm. And just screaming like, what are you? Who are you? And then it just cuts to the next scene. And I love that you never see what's actually, how that gets resolved. Like the thing probably just disappears, I assume. But, you know.
See, it's funny you mentioned that scene. That was the one scene I felt like was one too many. Because there was no connecting piece. It was fine. It was well done. Like every other kind of moment like that throughout the movie. But that was the only one that didn't connect. But, I'm sorry, what was I saying?
I was going to say that there are other moments before that where this thing appears to her and then it just cuts to something else, like, or even to other people. And it just cuts to like a different scene. And the other person is just like, you know, even more out of touch and like disheveled and stuff like that.
Yeah. You can definitely gauge her as the days go by after she sees, after she encounters whatever the curse smile character, that her mental state is really well, like the acting is really well done in that you're able to kind of track where she is and how close she is to breaking. So it was really well done, that those elements of it.
I think it definitely helped that she didn't have any children.
What about her fur baby? What about mustache? The cat.
What about mustache?
Yeah, the cat.
The what?
The cat.
Oh, the cat. Oh, that poor kid. Can you imagine? Also, that kid fucking killed it. The kid nailed it with that reaction. Like, what? What?
And then there's this scene later when she's freaking out in the car and they cut to him again. It's... they linger on it long enough to make you think, like, man, this kid must be fucked up after her, after seeing his aunt in this, you know, in this story. Dude, like, fucking act totally fucking nuts. And
oh my god, yeah, because the dead cat gets pulled out of the box, or like dropped out of the box.
Yeah,
she's like screaming mustache, and everybody's like, what the fuck is your problem? Why are you doing this? And like, everybody's kind of like, I wouldn't say it, I mean, they are attacking her, but for like, rightfully so, you know?
Right.
And how she like just starts, like starts to move back because she's freaking out, and then she sees like that patient of hers appears smiling at her.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, oh no, and then she fucking eats it, trips backwards, falls straight through a glass fucking coffee table, and just like glass shards all up in her business. Like, what the fuck?
It was fucking worst of a moment that can happen to an individual. Possible. It just escalated to such a degree that it got more and more dark and awkward and like terrifying and sad and just a lot of respects. Yeah, that was a really good scene too. Even though like I'm like anti cat animal violence. So. And you love it, John.
That's true.
I know you.
I love it.
Need more of it.
Here's Rolando smiling for the movie Smile for Instagram post. Add us on Instagram.
Yeah. Cool. Did you have any other thoughts? Did you want to get into spoilers so we can talk about this ending?
Yeah, I was going to say so we can talk about the ending because I'm not entirely sure what can we spoil? This thing is never explained. I can't think of one explanation as to what this thing is.
Yeah, no, it's fucking it follows type of thing, session 9 type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of this dark entity.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop, please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
spoilers.
Yeah, so for getting into spoilers, you hated that it didn't have... that there was no closure, right?
There was closure, but it was pretty on this... like, so to explain, like, she goes back to the house of her childhood, which they briefly mentioned that it's still around. And she just... because she wants to go alone. Because she ends up meeting some guy who tells her that either you kill somebody in front of somebody and it passes to the next person, or it takes over your own body. Similar to It Follows, right? Like, you have to sleep with somebody else or you know, continue to pass it, or if not, you're going to die. So she just gets the idea to just seclude herself at her childhood home and to fight this thing. She has that confrontation with... she has the... not confrontation, but she has that... conversation with her mother's
which was like really sad, and I think that gave her closure, you know, more so than what this thing was trying to do. But then her mom turns into the lady from Barbarian
and It Follows, another tall in his underwear creature. I'm sorry, I saw too many similarities to It Follows. But
so yeah, you keep saying It Follows, so I'm saying this movie is like pretty much exactly like the Japanese versions of like Ringu or Juan. That's what I'm saying. Like that era of the 2000s, late 90s, like very similar style of like, there's not going to be any ending to this movie. Like there could be 80 movies like this and it will never end.
Right.
And that's kind of the idea. Yeah.
I like that.
Not to make more movies, but like that it never goes away. It never ends.
Right. Yeah. And I like that you, that's actually a great pull. I know exactly what you mean. Like, I think Ring has the thing where she, it's the same thing, like she confronts it and realizes that no, it needs to continue on and on. It's just a dark evil thing. It doesn't care. Yeah. It doesn't want to have resolution.
Something to the effect of like what grief, misery, and fear can never die. You just got to accept it for what it is and move on.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like
that. And so this one, if I mean,
or set yourself on fire.
So yeah, one of the two. I'll steal a line from was it like session 9? It lives in the weak and the wounded, right? So it.
Oh yeah.
So it is the sort of, I guess, trauma that we carry with us. Is it feeds on it, I guess.
Or yeah, or I'll steal a line from Ninja Turtles to. What is it? Back to the Ooze.
I'm
right?
coming.
I'm coming. Go ninja, go ninja, go.
Hmm. Well said. I don't know what that means.
It's a Vanilla Ice makes a cameo and he sings this song at the end. He's like, "Go ninja, go ninja, go, go ninja, go ninja, go."
I guess I totally was buying that there is a fake out ending and I didn't like buy it. Right? That. She...
Oh, you could totally see it coming. Yeah. I feel like maybe that was intentional too. I think the idea was like this, whatever it is, really, really wants to fuck with your mental state.
Mm-hmm.
Like it loves that. So that's why I thought like, oh, wow, this thing is like really fucking with her, isn't it? Like there's no way it was that easy.
So I like the idea that it's, I guess, and what ends up happening is that she, of course, was able to defeat it because she pretends that she's able to burn it and she goes and talks to the cop or whatever that she's kind of been involved with.
You know what? Because she had off screen watched The Watchmen or read the graphic novel and was like, I am Rorschach. So she was like, I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me.
Pretty much.
And then she threw fire at the
Yeah, thing. That's a great explainer. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I'm serious. So do you think that she could have defeated this had the cop not shown up? Because that's kind of what it kind of almost is saying, right? That like had the cop.
Yeah.
Because he was like within range or he showed up at all. That
I would also like to. I have like a pretty solid argument for this being the sequel to Fallen. Do you remember that movie?
Oh, like, yeah, yeah.
90 something, right?
Yeah.
Or John Candy and Denzel Washington. Mm-hmm. Where at the end, this thing, or it's like a demon or whatever, but you get to hear the demon's dialogue more than this one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess the thing does talk, but at the end, when Denzel Washington goes out in the middle of a cabin, same idea as this, just to like let the thing jump in him and then let himself die so this demon doesn't have anywhere else to go, but the demon just jumps into the nearest animal nearby. I'm like, yeah, there's no way of telling what is actually paying attention.
Right. Yeah. So I think that might be the intention there, that there may be a way to defeat it if you're able to get alone and die, it dies with you. Possibly is the
maybe possibly. Right, but maybe it jumps into like a cockroach, or maybe it, you know,
very true.
Maybe this is just like kind of like a virus where it's like that's not even like the original version of that thing. It's just like a leg spread of like a bunch of tentacles. I'm poorly explaining this, but yeah, where like maybe we're only following this one line of instances happening as opposed to how wherever else it spread to different people.
Yeah, and I think that she ends up succumbing to the... Rose ends up becoming this creature and ends up passing it on to the cop love interest. And I guess if they fucking make a sequel, which I'm sure they will because it's a huge box office, Gallner? I thought it was Gallagher, but it's Gallner. Is... Yeah.
R.I.P. Gallagher.
He fucking will be the protagonist, the next person with this curse or something. Or they could just do something completely different. You know, it's fucking movie's gonna movie. So.
Maybe, because like, it's socially acceptable for a cop to brutally murder anybody and be okay. Like, so he's probably in the clear.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I mean, those. That her, I guess I was trying to understand why I didn't quite enjoy that ending. I guess I wanted something more final to happen. I guess I wanted her, the Rose character, going with her through this whole movie. I guess I wanted her to kind of have... I had such empathy for her. I wanted her to have like a moment where she actually was okay and defeated it. That's what I wanted. And when that kind of didn't happen and you get to kind of get the more logical, cruel ending of it. That it kind of rubbed me the wrong way, but in no terms that I think it's like a bad ending. It makes complete, you know, sense or whatever.
Yeah. Cause there's also no telling. Like, I also refuse to believe, okay, you could imagine this thing being around since, like, the dawn of time or something, right? Mm-hmm. Like, not like it just recently popped up, like, a month ago. For this thing, for somebody to have attempted any of these situations already, which is why I think, like, this thing fucked with her. And I thought that was, like, really fun, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, yeah, it's very... That aspect of it is very much the Grudge, where like it doesn't matter. This thing's gonna kill you whenever it wants. You can't stop it. It's also just gonna keep spreading. Because I think we've talked about it, but like the original, there's what, two or three Grudges, the Japanese version. What is it called? Juan. And that's what the movies are. There's no actual storyline. It's just like somebody goes to this house. The cop gets this thing, attaches to the cop, which then attaches to like another person he talks to, which then attaches to another person they talk to. And that's what the whole movie is. It's just like a bunch of different sequences of this thing continuously attaching. And then it ends.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next movie starts off where that ended and just the same thing.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely. That makes complete sense, where it can kind of pick up from. And I thought, you know, again, I want to comment on like just the direction was so good and like so like for a big, I wouldn't say a big mainstream movie, but for a studio movie, it had a lot of like personality to it. It had a style and substance, which is kind of like, unfortunately, there's a lot of these movies that are turned out in such in studios that are turned out so fast that they have no like visual style to them, I guess, right? Because it's just making a product.
Yeah.
And even though they have astronomical budgets and stuff, but it's usually they have to work so fast and get it done, and they have to hit their, the movie's already has a release date, so they have to get it out. Specifically looking at Marvel as having no personality filmmaking.
I just had a long conversation about this last night at a Christmas get together where it's like, we could do with less Marvel movies now, which is like sad because I was like, you know, we were all like comic book geeks growing up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, if the argument is, well, these movies are trying to be like the comics where it's just like, you know, never ending. And yeah, you got to read these to understand what's going on here. I'm like, no, comics are not like that. There could be an ongoing series of like a billion and you could pick up in the middle and it'd be fine. It's not like you're forced to watch these other things.
To add to that point, they always say, I forgot who said it, but the sort of one of the principles of writing comics is every comic is somebody's first comic. So so they never write them in a way that is, yes, it's continuing probably a storyline they're writing, but it should be accessible enough to where you can pick it up and just read and enjoy it, enjoy the story for what it is. So,
1,000,000%. I'm piggybacking off of that. You know, everybody's first porno mag, you know, it may be a continuing line of like Penthouses or Playboys, but like they each got to be exciting, you know, otherwise you don't want to like have to backtrack and buy all of them.
Yeah, like,
or you could
Jugs or Beaver Weekly or, it's all I got.
High society. Which I don't even know if that's even a thing anymore, but
yeah.
And then I have nothing. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Now it's just called Google.
Yeah. .com. It's called TikTok or I don't know.
Oh, shout out to OnlyFans. What the fuck? We're just like, not even
right now. They're just like, oh, we don't know anything about porn. Yeah. All right. Do you have any last thoughts?
No, just what a wild ride. It leaves a smile on your face.
Nice. All right. John, how many spooky spoilers? How many? Try that again.
I'm going to give smile.
Wait. Let me do the thing. Hold on. I got to have cut cues in this when I edit. How many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm gonna give Smile 6.8 sexy spoilers, spooky, sexy bones.
69 tossed rim job salads.
Yeah. So that's what I gave it.
6.8. Wow. Yeah. Did I like this movie more than you?
Oh, I don't know. It's just like definitely not The Black Phone or like, you know, it's like I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it too. I was going to give it an 8. I'm much higher on this movie. I liked it a lot, despite not liking the ending very much. Being disappointed. Not that I didn't like it. I was just disappointed. But no, I really liked it too. I don't think there's
It's not Black Roses, I'll say that.
No, but what is? What is? That's the first and last movie like that. It's so unique.
I thought not horror movie at all, Silent Night would be it, but no, apparently it's just a boring, boring bore fest of a movie.
Yeah. Wow, I can't believe I liked it more than you. Interesting. Cool. That was a surprise. We were usually like on the same rating feeling ballpark. This is a little weird, yeah. But that's fine. It's fine. It happens.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think 6.8 is a bad
thing. No, no.
I feel like for it to reach like 8, like I could probably give this like a 7 also, like or 7.5 or something like that. Cause to me, that's kind of the same general rating.
Mm-hmm.
But for it to be 8, it's going to be like, what? Like, when's the last movie I gave an 8? Like, Barbarian was fucking fantastic. Or like,
so you gave Black Roses a 5. So it's just a little better than Black Roses?
Which Black Roses is like the perfect middle of the ground movie. So it deserves a 5. It is.
Okay. Okay.
Great.
I guess I just liked it more. Interesting. Okay. Cool. I guess let's just end the show. All right, guys, girls, right. Non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky. Let's put a smile on that face. Oh, fuck. It's the Joker's ghost.
Oh.
End the stream now. That's what the movie is. We ruined it.
I'm more satisfied with that now. I like this movie more.
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to go.